Welcome to Chai with Sam Dosa. I'm your host, Sam Dosa. Today I have brought some great speaker, coach, author. I'll give you some more detail about my today's guest. Before that, let me just tell you more about my podcast. It's been running since June 2020, and I have completed half a century now and moving towards my third quarter. So it's going fast. So I'm very blessed getting a lot of people coming in on my podcast and sharing their amazing wisdom with my audience. Today is another exceptional personality I have on my podcast. His name is Minter Dial. He's a professional speaker, storyteller, consultant, and a veteran executive with a 16 years high profile career at L'Oreal. He's a specialist on new tech, branding, and leadership, and is regularly cited as a major influencer, including being a 2020 global top 20 influential figure in marketing. He got a great book as well. He's a co-author of a book, best-selling and award-winning Future Proof, How to Get Your Business Ready for the Next Disruption, Pearson, October 2017, and author of award-winning Heartfelt Show, Empathy, Getting Heart into Business and Artificial Intelligence. He received his BA in Triangular Literature from Yale University and his MBA from NC. Wow. Lot of accolades and lot of things you have achieved. So welcome to my podcast, Chai with Sam Dosa.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you for the lovely introduction. It's somewhat, when you roll it off like that, I'm like, oh my gosh, I did that. Yeah, oh God, I forgot. Oh yeah, that's right.
You're so humble about it, huh? That's absolutely beautiful. So may I start with some sort of a very deep question with my guest is, so who is Minter Dial and what is his purpose in this amazing world?
Well, who is Minter Dial? He is work in progress. I at one point thought I knew myself, and I got married and my wife clearly showed me I had a different side of me and made me grow in our relationship. And then at one point I actually took a coach and did the work of really trying to dig in and figure out where I'm weak, where I'm not so good, and try to, I would say, create a more fuller picture of who I was to myself. And then in terms of my purpose, which was what came out of that, I ended up with a French sentence, but I've converted it, of course, into the notion of being known for elevating the debate and for connecting dots, people, and ideas. And that's sort of what I kind of want to do, make sure every day I do a bit of that.
Very true. Very, very great answer to the question. And sometimes my guests are a little bit reluctant to understand, or they might have not dived into those other area of their own journey. Yeah. So which is also a beginning of the journey as well, to dive into those.
Sure. Other things.
Absolutely. Yeah. So tell us what you are doing right now and what is your purpose of going forward with this whole disruption about COVID-19. How you have taken on board, and your book, which is also in the pipeline, which is coming hopefully next year, I understood. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about that.
Right. Well, as a professional speaker, I used to travel about 150 days a year around the world, and I'm used to speaking in front of live audiences. That stopped rather quickly in March, and at least the traveling portion did. And as such, all of my business just dried up. A few of the speeches I had planned in the second quarter were maintained, or at least transferred immediately into online. And then for the rest, everything was sort of put on hold. And as a result, my business went in the dump. Mm-hmm. And I still do other work like consultancies, and I have some other assignments which are throughout the whole year, you know, when you have directorships and so on. But like, oh, gruesome. So what I really wanted to do, not that I hadn't done it before, was to figure out how to play within this little square. What can you do to make this as great as possible? So when I was at school, Sam, aside from being athletic and definitely not academic, I love theater. And I'm a little bit geeky as well. So what you can't see is I have lighting, full on lighting beyond just lamps. I have a proper microphone. I have an HD camera. I've got a great green screen, which you don't see now, but I have it. So I converted technically. And then from a theatrical standpoint, was to figure out how to make this thing work, how to play with sound and silence.
Excellent. Yeah, majority of people have moved online with their offering, with their new courses coming in, whether people are actually diving into other area of online conferences, summits. I've been to so many summits as well, and also has been a challenge traveling. And so with your experience so much, you have traveled so many countries. Share some experiences with me or my audience. What was your experience when you were in America, or whether you were in Europe, whether you were in South Asia, wherever you've been? Share some experiences. What sort of audience you interacted and how people have taken you on board, and what was their experience with you?
So just a lay of the land. I have changed countries 15 times. I have visited probably 80 or 90 countries. I've worked in 40, that's to say actually offices doing stuff and so on. I've spoken in the five continents, and I have tried to learn a lot of languages. Mm-hmm. And that's a key point, because I continue to see how much more fun it is when I'm in learning mode. I want to tell you a little story, Sam, about how an American, French, English bred executive landed in Canada. Mm-hmm. And any Canadians out there will recognize in France, England, and America a certain relationship. So when I arrived, I thought, well, I feel like I'm as ready in terms of background as possible to be embedded in and enjoy Canada. And over the 3.5 years I lived there, I was not disappointed. But I did have a fairly rock and roll start. Mm-hmm. And so it got me to get off my high horse of I'm a traveled man and I know my stuff. Because Canada, it's no Karachi or something very different. I speak the language, the culture's not that far away. In fact, it comes from, with, and so on. Mm-hmm. Anyway, when I arrived, I came into Quebec where we were living, and I was invited out one of the first days, as I wanted to go in the field and meet hairdressers, which are my clients. I was running the Canadian subsidiary for the professional division. Mm-hmm. And the head of sales brought me out, and to show that I was really willing to take on the Canadian spirit, I put on my lapel a little flag, insignia of Canada, the maple leaf. Mm-hmm. And the first hairdressing salon we went into said to me, essentially, with the sales director beside me, said, well, who's this? And obviously, and in French, this is the bursar. And then he looked at me and he sort of took his glasses down like this. And then he said in French, c'est un peu tôt pour montrer vos couleurs, monsieur. Which means it's a little soon to be showing your colors. By which he meant that in Quebec, the maple leaf isn't always appreciated. So the naivete that I had, thinking that I could embrace all of Canada at once, was deeply wrong. Of course, I was quite upset at my sales director for not warning me about that. I can still remember his name. And the conversation I had afterwards about that wasn't in our best interest to me to look like an idiot or some antagonistic foreigner. Anyway, the point is I'm still learning, Sam, and always want to stay open to that difference. Even if we might speak the same language, we come from different history, culture, background, experiences, and that's the extraordinary excitement for me to continue to travel.
Amazing. I think what you have opened up over here is my journey to, because I was born and brought up in Pakistan. And I moved in 1996 over here. But prior to that, I was working in a very large university hospital, and I was interacting with everybody from globe, whether you call it Australia, you call it Italy, you call it Spain, you call it India, you call it Canada, Africa. So I had a very flavor of people, talking to a lot of people. And when I moved over here in the UK in 1996, it was a completely different cup of tea for me. I could not say this phrase of cup of tea because it was a complete
cup of chai.
Cup of chai sort of thing. And you have this universal energy around you. It's guiding you in a very different ways where you have to learn a lot of things. And I was lucky that my journey wasn't that, well, my journey was a great journey, a great adventures. And luckily, I found a job in 2 weeks' time within the country, arriving and finding a job. Because I had this experience as a word processor operator and all sorts of things going in. And I was ahead of the game in computing when I came over here. So when I used to say that I can use this application, oh, well, it's not been introduced in society as yet. I said, really? So you are overqualified for the position. Now, whether I was overqualified for the position or whether my skin was not the right skin for the position at that time. In 1996, there were a lot of things were happening, and I wasn't aware of those sort of racial things going on. And my ex-wife used to tell me, you have to be very careful which area you go into because there are also a lot of racial roids going on, and then you need to be careful about how you present yourself over there. So it was interesting. But the journey was very great. But as we all are open to learning, and we learn every day we learn something new. So what you're going to teach us today?
Well, let me say that you mentioned the COVID world, and there's a lot of things to be fearful about. Mm-hmm. Or at least there are a lot of things that people are fearful about. I am of the mode to think we need to dig down and in on some form of courage. I also think that we need to, in that space, go back to a little bit more traditional, some more traditional values. That's my feeling. But the thing that really jumps out at me is our need to be more present. Because along the fear story, I kind of suspect that a lot of it is related to our own notions of failure and concerns, for example, of death. And this COVID story has kind of confronted us all with this story, which, by the way, existed pre-COVID. And when you get into that fear mode where you're worried about tomorrow or worried what's going to happen, I kind of feel we've lost touch with our past, and we've certainly forgot to be present. And so we have to have the courage to believe in a different future. And we have to have the space of mind to start focusing on being present, which means sort of getting rid of future worries, baggage from the past, and getting present with the people you're with. And hopefully using that moment of presence to dive into more meaningful conversations than to talk about fear-mongering, what the media is saying, and something that may happen, but absolutely may not happen as well.
Very true, very true. But again, because we have been put into this sort of a mindset by people around us or who you are surrounding yourself, also what you are watching on the media, what sort of news channels you are watching. I have stopped watching TV or news for almost 10 years now. I don't watch TV or no news. I don't read any newspaper in terms of any sort of stupid news. On the net. Sometimes the paper, the news started coming in, and some of the news I think might be in terms of that information needs to be cascaded. So that's what I read. Other than that, is anything about conspiracy theories and this and that, and you have to follow this sort of thing, make sure that you do not get your vaccination done. And there are a lot of conspiracy theories, and this is all scaremongering. And you can imagine people are actually under so much pressure at the moment, regards to their livelihood has been completely shifted. They, as you lost your business, you have the bigger impact on yourself. I was talking to you about another chap who lost the business as well. So there are millions of people who have actually completely, and government is paying, government is giving you some money, but again, government is actually increased the debts on them, which we have to take it off. Nobody else. The more the currency is going to be printed, the more we are going to be paying the debt out from our own pocket. Nobody else. The next government will come in and say, oh, well, conservative have put about 13 trillion amount of money on the debt because there was a rubbish government and this and that. Again, everybody's a blaming game. Yeah, we have to come out from this sort of a society. We have to start coming from a way how we see life going to be. As you said, you have to be started thinking in the present moment. What is happening? How are we going to start living in the present moment? Because we are never used to live in the present moment. Death, we are never being told. A lot of people within the religion I am, that is part of our life. We have to die. I'm talking to you right now. I might have a heart attack and I die. Okay, I don't know. Correct? So I'm ready for it. It's not about that I'm not ready for it. The people were not ready for it. That came started as a sudden shock to a lot of people. Yeah, young people have died. Older people have that multiple issues with their bodies or their immune system. They died as well. I have lost a lot of loved ones as well. So it's a journey, but people are not being ready for it. We were not ready for it for 8 months lockdown. Nobody was ready for anything, and we were being put into that. People start saying, oh, working from home. Working from home is not new. I was working in BT in 2000, in 19, I lost the job in 2009. During that time, I was working from home in 2006. This is nothing new. Working from home is not a new phenomenon. It's an old phenomenon. Well, now everybody started to look at it. Wow, it's really, really helping us reduce the cost in so many manners. People who are working from home for last 8 months, they think, do I have to go back to work? No, I don't want to go to office doing a 2 hour journey. I'd rather work from home, surrounded by my family. A lot of people does not surround by themselves by their family as well. Can you hold for a second? I think my daughter is at the door. I
Sure.
might have to bring her inside. Yeah, hold a second. I'm
You
gonna
must get
call.
her inside.
So as I was saying to you, is there is a lot of scaremongering going on. There are a lot of things that are being given or not given to the society, and the information is very less transparent. It has been wrapped into so many lies, and people are getting so much confused with this. And that's what is happening right now. What's your thought on that?
So when I said you need to have courage, I think part of that is the courage to rely on common sense. And part of that common sense, of course, there's common sense. There's just an individual sense of wisdom and what you are actually feeling. And so that's where I think we start, perhaps, is to start thinking with critical reasoning about what's being said, and can't say I'm on the left and everything the right says is wrong, or vice versa. These are, I would almost say, fictional ideas, abstract in the highest degree, and creates a whole nother warping of the way we think. As far as this, the whole situation is concerned, I want to reflect back what I see rather than necessarily drive a judgment, which is that I see outside of the fear, country by country, left or right, we have come to a point where every death is unacceptable. And for the sake of any death, we'll do anything. But it's actually any death related to COVID. So if you have cancer and die, that's not important. The only thing that's important is saving people from the possible death of COVID. And the language that we're using, the way the media is driving the singular narrative around the singular story needs to have critical reasoning. And so what I, notwithstanding these ideas of conspiracy, you know, conspiracy theories that you were talking about, and sure, any death is undesirable, but can we not just step back and check in with some common sense? Does this all make sense? Is this everything we should be doing correctly? And can we possibly do things better without putting a finger at the governments, because they're in a bind, because we live for the most part in democracies, which means that they need to get reelected. And the way it works is whether it's the media or the opposite flanks, you get shot down for anything you do. And, you know, any one death is on your head. But the reality, in my opinion, is that we're in a situation where not only do we have economic deaths happening, we have mental health issues. We have very unhappy people working at home, from home. We have people who, because of the economic fallout, will encounter greater mental health issues. There's a very sharp correlation, at least in the United States, between those who go bankrupt and those who commit suicide. So anyway, I think that my reflection is maybe there are some alternate ways to think that what we're being fed by the media isn't necessarily always the right story.
Very true. Very true. So in your experience, how people started to look the positive, look at more optimistic about the present as well as the, because we can't see the future. We can see only the present at the moment. How they can become optimistic about it?
Right. Well, I'm personally I'm not optimistic mm-hmm. about the way things are going. Mm-hmm. So I could very quickly run down that rabbit hole of how this is all going to play out if we continue to behave in the way that we've been behaving. Mm-hmm. We're going to get down to a little bit of a survival mode where, as you say, all this money has been printed, there will be a reckoning that comes to bear. And we are going to need to really dig in on what's going on. So let's go with some positive elements. First is, this has been a great time to reflect. Of course, some people are in survival mode and running and racing and doing whatever they can to make a buck, to not go into foreclosure or whatever. Yet for the rest, or many who are not doing the 2-hour commute, as you were referring to before, mm-hmm. great opportunity to sit back and say, Minter, who am I? And why am I? Why am I working on what I'm working? How is that related to doing something that is going to make me feel good? Because if it's just about selling widgets to get a paycheck to pay the rent, that's a bad road to go down, because it ends with burnout. It ends with unhappiness and unfulfillment. So consider a little bit more who you are. Take this time to reflect on that. What am I doing and why am I doing what I'm doing? And how is that going to make the world a better place, at least in my circle? And then the second thing I'm going to tell you in terms of let's more upbeat approaches is to think about how you can reconnect. We're connecting through Zoom. People are connecting through social media. As connected as we may be, I think we're very disconnected. And the disconnection starts with the self. I feel that in the do mode, checking off lists of things to do, we forgot to be, which is the story about being present. And we need to reconnect with ourselves first. But there are so many other ways to reconnect, including like dirt. Mm-hmm. And go down into a garden and put your hands in the dirt and feel the earth. Put your ear to the ground and listen to ants walking, that kind of stuff. So reconnect with nature, reconnecting with animals. Take the time. You're walking by, you see a nice dog, the person's approachable, pet the dog and ask for nothing. You can just reconnect with strangers and as well. And then think about people you haven't spoken to. Go down your list and try new people. Hey, listen, it's been 2 years since we spoke. I wanted to reach out. And I think those methods of reconnecting are going to help you to re-energize, because as we were talking about before, Sam, going into the second half, mm-hmm. it's a very different second half than the first half of 2020. And the energies are down. And frankly, I think that there are two main reasons for it, at least in the Northern Hemisphere. One of them being that every day is shorter. And that doesn't help when you can't go outside and mingle or go for a walk in the sunshine. And you have to do it very quickly within the day. And the fact is that we live off sunshine as well. Mm-hmm. And there's a second reason, which is not only is the novelty of the lockdown moved away, but I think we're questioning whether this is the right approach. And the suffering is beginning to come in, the real suffering, as we've had gone from furloughed to now unemployed. And we're going to see the economic issues come to bear. So I think that I think we need to reconnect. Mm-hmm. We need to connect with ourselves, nature, strangers, old friends, family, get over your political heebie-jeebies and get in and connect with people and regain some energy.
That's a lot of things you have actually put in here is quite important and significant. And looking at the brighter picture is also another area where people not see it, because when I speak to a lot of people about, you know, what are your morning routines or rituals or whatever you call them, are you present? Because, you know, you have been given another day, another new beginning. What is your take on that? Is it this, we use this phrase, you know, same shit, another day. Yeah. Because we are have so much going on in our head. We not bearing it. That is a new opportunity, new day. Come on. I understand we are going into a cycle of a same cycle of going into the same routine and same thing. But there is always a way you can snap that routine. Talk to some new people, as you mentioned, strangers. You talk to people, reach out to people you haven't spoken to. And that's this whole, because what you have said is about the COVID, whether it's a blessing or a curse. I usually ask the questions that you have answered. For a lot of people, it's a blessing because they had this given this opportunity to work from home so they can connect with their partner, their spouse, their children and everything. Other people, it might be a curse because they don't want to see their partner. It's too much going on. The partner doesn't want to see the person as well because you are hindering their space. You are completely invading their space and nobody likes their space to be invaded. So it's again the balancing act, how you're going to create a balancing act going forward in your life. Tell us, because you are a storyteller. Now, storytelling is an art. It's not everybody's cup of tea, I would say. Now, people who are an amazing storyteller, they have the way they see. The story is, are you talking about a personal story or are you talking about a business story? How are you going to form the story? Because I had another guest from America and she is a business storyteller. And she talked about the way she speaks to the CEOs. And when she talked to the CEOs, they're about the storytelling. And I says, I'm not a storyteller. It's not about the story, what you're talking about. You're making a story, which making an impact on somebody not for that moment, but the rest of that their life, because that's how that's going to impact. And storytelling is, as I said, is an art. And in the time of beginning of this big change in the world, 1400 years ago, people were not fighting with weapons. They were saying stories about people. And there was a big, huge place where people used to say a lot of stories about the present king or queen. And that was shared among a lot of people. And they started arguing about everything in the stories. So tell us about your take on storytelling.
Well, I think that people have been violent forever. I think it's a natural reaction that we have in our fight or flight mode. And whether you fight with words or sticks, mm-hmm. both hurt and both exist. Mm-hmm. Storytelling. So business storytelling is an interesting one because, well, we don't need emotions at work, right? You know, we're just there to do the work and perform and deliver the results at the end of the month, because that's what's important. Well, turns out that people actually help drive those results. So the question is, how do you move the people to move the results forward? And the issue at some level is, how personal do you accept yourself to be in a work environment? So I'm the boss, I'm super intelligent, I've got a great track record, I have CEO on my business card, and therefore everything I say must be listened to, and I must be extremely rational and efficient and effective in everything I do. So the idea of storytelling, wasting time, telling these stupid stories, on top of that with emotions, nah, not for me. So if this AD who was on your show talked about making it a business version that's palatable for people, I think the challenge is if it's not personal, it doesn't move. Stories are interesting because they beget emotions in you. So if I tell you a story, then it will remind you of an emotional experience, plus the facts, of course, that come with it. And there are, of course, facts and storytelling is an interesting combination. But I think that great stories, the best stories, naturally relate down at a personal level. So when I was running a company called Redken Worldwide, so we were one of 30 odd brands that are owned by L'Oreal. And it was a company that was bought by L'Oreal in the early 90s, having existed since 1960 as a standalone company started by this amazing founder, Paula Kent Meehan. And the idea that I felt that I needed to take on was to relate into her experience at a personal level. And I had the good fortune to run Redken while she was still alive. And I further had the great fortune to get to know her. And with amazing generosity and humility, I used to speak to Paula once a month. I'd sort of be 8 o'clock in New York, 5 o'clock in LA, and we would talk and I'd connect in with her, which really helped me when I was running around the world for Redken to relate her story. So I always wanted to be the relayer of her story. And by some kind of proxy, I became part of the story, if you will. But what I would do is I get to know her little quirks and eccentricities. And these aren't necessarily efficiency effective stories. This is just lore and stories. So for example, I used to go to Japan every 3 months and with long trip, grueling work. But I was always transported to Japan because Paula always said, well, in a prior life, I was incarnated Japanese, or I was previously Japanese, and I've transformed and I'm now American. And I like to recount that. Nothing to do with business. An entirely deeply personal story that Paula had. And that helped me connect into the people who were there, and they related back because it turns out other people believe in incarnation and reincarnation it's not something I necessarily believe personally, but I was telling the story because that was a very truly personal story from Paula's side. So you need to bring in stories, and the best stories are the ones that you can radiate into yourself. So the way that that happens, I said, I didn't believe in incarnation, for example, but I was really close to Paula and getting to understand her feelings. And so I related into her feelings for sure. And the extraordinary culture of Japan. And I was, I was just gobsmacked by the culture, the tradition, the respect, the difference of Japan. And I brought that with me. So you need, when you tell stories, it's great to have them feel into you. And that you personally relate into them. Otherwise they can sound like a load of horseshit.
Absolutely. You completely put the right place of your points and everything. And you have to connect within yourself to relay that story. If somebody is going to be not being authentic with the story, nobody's going to relate with it. Because I remember when I was paid to be a public speaker, I went into this workshop for 3 days and I was being told, oh, you don't have a story? Don't worry about it. Just make it up. Just make it up. And that was the crux of the course leader that's saying, you can't just make the story. The story has to come from within yourself. And it has to be related and connected to why those commercial works when there is an emotional entanglement, or why those things are working when people say, oh, remember. If you must have remembered Tony Robbins' analysis, there was an AT&T ad on this commercial that says, oh, I've been sitting over here, nobody calls me, old lady. And suddenly the message goes to a daughter or a son. Oh, you haven't spoken to your mom for a long time. Why did you call? That's an emotional connection. And I'll say, okay, call your mother. Yeah, free, no charge on calling to your your mother or father. Suddenly he spoke to her mother or speak to her mom or dad. Suddenly everything started to connect together. It's good to talk. Don't wait when something happens, because what's going to happen is, if you haven't spoken, as you said earlier, you know, this is a time of reflection. We start to reflect about a lot of things. We are never used to speak to my cousins. I never speak to my cousins. Now Zoom, every fortnightly we have a Zoom call. We talk and we connect with each other. And before that, before COVID, we have years goes by and we never only get the message, happy birthday, cousin, happy birthday, cousin. And that's it, nothing else.
Yeah, on LinkedIn, you know, where it's auto-generated. Yeah.
LinkedIn or there is a calendar software.
Reminder.
Yeah, reminder comes in and you send a message. Oh yeah, I remember your birthday yesterday, and just send a message. So it's time of, as a blessing, as a curse, as I earlier said, and the way a lot of things happen, this whole scenario is out of our control, because we are being given, because we are being put into this scenario to reflect upon a lot of things, to reassess yourself. What happened if this is going to happen? What happened if this is not going to happen for you? How are you going to survive? How are you going to look at yourself and your siblings and your other people around you? Yeah, it's not about only you.
Well, one of the challenges is when you're in the shit, it's hard to think straight.
True.
So it's much better to prepare before the shit happens. Mm-hmm. And part of that, I think, resetting that we might be having at a more international level is how important it is to have the biggest car, the biggest flat, the biggest bank account. Is that what it's all about? And so A, that's not gonna happen. B, in compensation for the illusion of the excitement and happiness of having a big chateau, is to figure out what life is about and fill your life with that. Of course, it sounds maybe a little trite, because if you don't have food on your plate, then it's not much worth to start thinking about how you're gonna save the world from starvation, because you need to survive. You need to have food on your plate. So there is that Maslow's hierarchy within that. Mm-hmm. One of the things I was going to tell you, Sam, is for 10 years, yeah, roughly 10 years, I have had it as a matter of principle to have a green meeting every day. Mm-hmm. And in my calendar, because I do things electronically, you know, back in the old days, it was in the old paper calendars. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can recall those days, Sam, but or people, that stuff. Yeah. So my digital calendar, I color code. And so I color code for what's important, for interviews, for sports activities and various things, family stuff, whatever. And then I have a green meeting every day. And the green meeting is I meet somebody new. And so I have a visual scan of my week and I can see 5 meetings that are green or not every week. And I don't need them all to be pre-planned ahead of time. I kind of get into my week and I see it. So my incitement to everybody who is interested in trying to reboot a bit, reconnect, get into energy, and who says that you can't meet because we're in COVID. Well, you know, meeting strangers in COVID, that's, you know, you can't even meet your friends. It's COVID. And I say, well, wait a second. If you want, you can. So very beginning, I was like, oh, shoot, we're locked down. We can't meet people. How am I going to do my meet new people story? Because I mean, basically, whatever, I used to go to these conferences. I met too many people all the time. That's what the problem was. So there are services out there. And the one that I use is called Lunch Club. And I meet somebody new every day, not necessarily only through Lunch Club, but Lunch Club is a artificial intelligence infused service mm-hmm. that connects you up with individuals, strangers. And according to who you are, what your interests are, it connects you up. And then, dang, I have a 45 minute with a new person and meet wow. them. So I continue to have, despite lockdown, my green meeting. So the point is, if there's a will, there's a way. And the idea, the will, should be around willingness to reconnect and with strangers, old friends, family, people you haven't seen in a long time, mm-hmm. nature and yourself.
Very true, very true. Yeah, if there is a will, there is a way, as you mentioned. And doors are open, as I said earlier as well. Doors are open if it's always you who to connect. If you're going to be shy, I said to my daughters, you know, if you don't ask, you don't get. Yeah. The way you connected with me was like, okay, direct. Okay, let's have a conversation with Sam. He's a podcaster. I'm a podcaster that connects. People are hiding before. There is a joke. Also, is a serious matter. So a huge plan was going from one country to another country and fell. And then all the people started to look for the survivors. But there were a lot of survivors left. There were a lot of English people. There were a lot of other nationality. And there were a couple of Indian people as well. Now, as we know, Europeans and Americans, and we are very open just to start have a conversation with people. We just go and start talking. But those two Indians were sitting there waiting for somebody to introduce them. So, is the way of looking at it. You go into a big, huge room and you look for the person who you might know, or you look for this person who is the same color skin and you go and say hello to that person. That's how people look at it. Because still, yeah. And that's what I said to a lot of people, you know, if you wait for the train station, you are not going to stop. You are just going to be in the same train rest of your life, going around the globe. You are not going to stop. You just jump out and meet new people and see them and say hello. It's not going to say, if the person say not hello to you, that's fine. Move on. Go and say hello to another person. So it's individual choice as well. Yeah. And how you connect with people. Some people are waiting for to be introduced. And some people are saying, you know what? Let's have a conversation. So how are you, mentor? How are you doing? So how far did you travel today? Conversation mm-hmm. start that way. Not, mm-hmm. oh, by the way, my name is Sam Dosa. I'm a business coach. That's my card. And people says, mm-hmm. okay, F off. dead lost.
Yeah. Well, Sam, I want to push in on one area, which is sure. on racism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, clearly, being a person of color mm-hmm. is different than being white. Yet within the white, there's plenty of isms.
Mm-hmm.
White people in a white room, if you will. There are those, you know, like to say men and women. Of course, that's not racism, but that's sexism. But then you there are lots of isms.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Black community, there are some Blacks that are considered different than others. And oh, I don't like them. And so the challenge is to consider if you get spurned by somebody of, you know, a white person says to you, Sam, you're just a Pakistani mm-hmm. or some kind of slur like that. Well, kind of, as you were saying, well, you need to move on because the issue is with that person. And that's their problem.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I also think that it is normal to, I write about in my new book about this paradox of mm-hmm. the feeling of needing to belong and to feel different. Because if we all have exactly the same car, same house, I'm not going to say the same wife, but, you know, the same life in general, well, then I'm going to look pretty much, you know, like a just another Tom, Dick or Harry.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you find your community, you still need to find your weirdness. But by having a community, that means that I don't belong to another community. You can't belong to every community, damn it. And so we need to choose our communities. You know, why you're going to like every sports team of every sport? No, you're going to like a sports team in a sport and the other sports I don't like so much, the other teams I don't like so much. And that's okay, because that's how we operate. I think it's part of our human condition to be able to reconstruct or construct an identity based on the people with whom we belong. And within that community, knowing that I exist differently.
Yeah.
And so it's, I think this notion of eradicating racism is tantamount, in my opinion, to eradicating human beings. Because as much as we'd like it, we are prone to corral together. You know, for example, I'm gonna be familyist. I'm going to say my family is more important than yours, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Is that wrong?
No.
At the end of the day, in certain circumstances, by the way, it could be very wrong. All right. You know, so if you start putting the context into it,
yeah.
But in the end of the day, we belong. And then we also need to feel different. And culturally that's different. Of course, you know, what is community? And in India you have castes, and in Britain, we might have accents. Yep. In America, we have a pocketbook.
Mm-hmm.
In France, we have an education. And of course, there's color and sex mixed into all of that. And home, you know, different sexualities and all that. So, but yeah, I think that we have to allow, and this is the courage point that I'd like to bring into this, Sam,
mm-hmm.
to be able to say that political correctness isn't always right. The idea that we want everything to be better, sure, but there are consequences to that. It would be great if we had no wars. It would be great if we had no poverty. It would be great if no one died. But it turns out that's our humanity. We do die, we do struggle, and that is our life. Is that road of struggle? Because if it was just a wonderful, everybody loves everybody and everything's perfect, what life would that be?
There was no purpose. Then there will be like, we will be robots. We will be robots. If you use what you said about that, we will be look like as same as everybody else. So it will be like same thing happening. There is a very good analogy for this from the Rumi. Have you read about Rumi, one of the mystic
poets? No, I haven't. I'm sorry. No.
Okay. So Rumi is the mystic poet. And what he used to do when he used to sit in his community discussion, Because he was a law professor in the morning, and in the evening he used to sit and discuss the deep meaning of love and everything. Love we use as a emotion, but love for my love to you as a completely different than my love to the divine is completely different, or for my soulmate is going to be completely different. So one of the, because Konya, where he was being lived and buried now, is the center of cosmopolitan society. There were people living in Christians, Jews, Hindus, all sorts of religion. Everybody was living together in harmony. And everybody used to come and sit in that sort of a communication or discussion. And because he has his own transition to a different realm of his life, into a different oblivious of learning something different. So everybody comes to him, listen to his interpretation. So there were, as we want that all the society, all, whether it's a Christian, it's a Muslim, whether it's a Jew, everybody just live together. And what is the best way to harmonize, to marry into the same religion or same or other religions? Women can be married into Muslim or Jew or Christians, then we can create a unifying relationship going forward. So somebody came into his presence and says, would it be a better idea to marry a woman from a different religion to create harmony, not forcing that person to become what you are? And Rumi took his time and says, this is not going to happen in this world. We are not meant to do this in this world. It's not possible to do this in the world, because it's not meant to happen in this world. Only thing this is going to happen is once you die, when you are there into the next realm where your souls are going to be, there where is going to be everything one, because you are belong to that creator who has created you. And everything over there is one. There is no Christians, Muslims, or Jew, or Hindus, or anybody else. Everybody is going to be the same person over there. But in this transient world, it's not possible. Because
what too you're tribal.
Going, yeah. What you're going to be doing is you're going to be saying that I'm going to marry your woman from your tribe and ask her to change into my tribe, to change the way she has been practicing her faith and everything. Nobody look at the pluralistic society. As yet, only one country which is very pluralistic at the moment, which is Canada, where we are looking at a lot of pluralism going on. Pluralistic society has been created over there as well. And there are only few leaders only talk about pluralism at the moment. Not everybody talk about pluralism, because it's a new way of looking at life, how you start living in a pluralistic society, because you are right, left and center, surrounded by everybody. My wife is Hindu. I'm Muslim. I don't want her to convert to Muslim, because that's what we believe. Why should I force anybody? But somebody comes into a different perspective and says, no, how does this happen? You shouldn't be doing that. You should make sure that she converts. I say, no, it's not possible. It's not. From my perspective is she happy where she is? I'm happy where I am. Why should I disturb the rhythm, which is very harmonious and very connected together? I don't want to do that. But because we are being told from our childhood that this is what it is, and we have been bombarded with so many unrealistic things which are not true, what the message has been cascaded from Jesus Christ or Prophet Muhammad or Prophet Moses was completely differently interpreted and given it to us. And you says, okay, now this is what has been said by Moses or Jesus or Muhammad. Oh, no, your interpretation is wrong, actually. You are completely mixing it up in your own language, correct? So because people are a little bit knowledgeable, they're twisting. And within the different religions, they say, oh, if you're not going to do this, you are going to be burned in hell. And I said to people, you know what the crazy thing is? Heaven and hell is here in this world. There are seven layers of heaven Even though you reach to the first layer, you will stuck there, mate. How are you going to go to the next level if you are not preparing yourself in this transient world? You have two bank balance. One is your bank balance, which you are eating from, which is your day-to-day earning and everything. Your other bank balance is your deeds. If your deed bank balance is empty, you are completely skinned, mate. You will be living in the lower part of your spiritual journey.
Well, yeah, so I there's a term that people use, karmic bank account.
Yes.
And and it's something that I truly believe in the understanding that karma is about actions, not just about shit that goes around. And so if you have intention, then an action, that is what is going to drive your karmic bank account. So interestingly, you're married to a Hindu lady. I married a French Spaniard, Basque personality. And so therefore definitely different from an American English bred person, different languages, different background, different education. We don't have religion as an issue per se, but there's a lovely Chinese expression which says, if you want to go fast, do it by yourself. If you want to go far, do it together. And while this means things like rearing of children, decisions that harken back to our ancestral upbringing can become complicated when you're confronted with a different culture. The mixture is genuinely more interesting. And the negotiations and the road you go down has to be, it's obviously more turbulent. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think there's any way to get through a few fights to figure out, to mix it up. And then this idea of communities is interesting when you get into the mode of multicultural communities. And one of the things that is always fun for me is when I meet these green people, I have no idea who I'm meeting. I mean, generally, no, they'll give me a couple of lines and I probably know their sex based on their name, but that's not always the case. You know, there's some, you know, names, Indian names that I don't know actually if it's a female or a male. There are many, you know, George, there are girl Georges and boy Georges, so to speak. Yeah. Right. To mention a few others. And so you come into it, and then the question is, are you prepared to listen without a bias? You know, I see you, you're a male, you told me who you are, but then I'm going to come with bias, right? So I'm going to see things and I'm going to have immediate experiences from my past that is going to come in here. And somehow it's not possible for me to white slate my experiences in the past. So I feel like we have to accept those and then move through them. And then ask questions, listen, and converse. And instead of needing to impose on you my thought, exchange. Here's my story. Oh, that reminds me of this. And then we're in a to and fro. That's not a reporting moment. It's a rapporting moment.
Yeah. Very true. So, you know, sometimes what happened is when we meet some new people, we started to, as you said, you know, you're coming from back your experience, a lot of people, you have met several hundred thousand people in your span of life so far. So because you have traveled so many places, again, when you meet some new person, you always intend to, make them comfortable. Also, you want to know, because you're curious about who you are meeting. How are you going to communicate? What sort of stories are going to unfold over there? And that's the beauty of things when you start to have a conversation. And I remember when I used to meet some new people, I never had any expectation. I never keep any expectation. I say, well, I'm going to just go and just see somebody. It's going to be something, a new learning thing for me as well as for that person. So I think that's the way it should be, to meet somebody instead of this you know, we have so many dating sites and people are cussing them, saying that they are all rubbish, because they are, because you are just going there just to have fun, not looking for a long-term partnership there, a long-term relationship there. So you will find those sort of people over there, nothing else.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, Sam, there are all sorts of people, right? And I think the term that comes to mind is transactional. And so it's sort of antithetical to the karmic approach. Mm-hmm. So, well, if I'm going to spend this time, what am I going to get out of it? And somehow it's a very masculine approach. It's sort of like, what is the result here? How am I going to win this? And if you go in with the, how am I going to win? How am I going to convince you? How am I going to beat you? How am I going to get you to buy my product or get you to listen to my lie? Then that victory is short-lived in terms of, anyway, your karmic bank. But I also think from a, you know, relational standpoint, it's your intentions are misaligned.
Yes, they are. And that's the ironic part of it, because that's what we are occasionally, or most of the time, I think I would say people are looking at that way. And they are just looking at in terms of, this is what it is, you know, what is in it for me? You know, what is in it for me? I'm going there, what's in it for me? Oh, if I'm not going to sell something, I'm wasting my time. I'd rather not sit there. I just quickly disperse. But again, preparing yourself is not about winning. It's about listening. How many people come to you, or how many times you have this experience that somebody, a strange person, come to you, empty the deepest secret to you, and then say, thank you, bye-bye. When you realize, excuse me, what happened? It happens to me. Somebody sitting next to me in the bus, on the bus with me, and started chatting. Once it's finished, he just said, oh, thank you for listening. Okay, thank you for sharing. And that's it. Where he went, where I went, completely different station.
There was no need for a further transaction. The thing happened.
Yeah.
The moment was it.
Yeah.
The present was in the presence.
Absolutely. You started living in the present. Yesterday, day before yesterday, I had another interview I did with a guy in Utah. And it's the same, you know, we have forgotten to enjoy the moment. We have forgotten to enjoy the food in the moment, or anything what we eat. We are not eating in the moment. We are not mindfully doing those sort of things. We are robotic now. If somebody says, oh, I'm going to sit down for my dinner, you're going to just start fork and knife and start eating, not realizing that you are gorging the food, because your system, your body is designed to tell you, if you eat your food mindfully, you chew it, you enjoy the each and every taste of it. When it goes down, it tells your tummy, because your tummy is not a sort of a recycling bin. It's going to take time to digest. And it will tell your mind, you are full that much. Don't overeat yourself. So, because that's why the obesity, that's why a lot of problems with our gastric problems, that's why we have heartburn, that's why we have so many other things going on in our life. We are not taking time out to be mindful of a lot of things. And I said to some people, do you have 10 minutes in a day? Doing what? Sitting in mindfulness. And he said, no, I don't have time for mindfulness, but I have time to make another call to make a business. But that's what you can do. But you have 824,000 seconds a day, but you don't have 10 minutes to spend on yourself.
Okay. I like to say there are 100 10-minute slots in a day in your waking day.
Yes.
So 1/100th of your day, you don't have time for you.
That's what is called it, that you are running like a robot. You are running, chasing the money. And I remember when I was young, when I was 18, yeah, I remember that somebody says to me, what this light on your face? And I says, well, I don't want the world. I just want to live inside what I have within me. So I wasn't running behind the world. World was running behind me at that time. And since I came in 1996 here, everything changes. I was chasing the world. And now, after another 25 years, it's reverted back again. I'm not chasing the world. Let the world chase me now. I think we are all getting to that age or learning to this wisdom of started living this moment of time and reflecting upon it was more important. Is it my health is more important, or is the money which I'm going to earn is more important? And what is going to support my family is more important than anything else. So that's what's been happening.
So as much as I want to be present, Sam, I also realize I have another call that's hearkening in the world of time and 24 hours we have to live in.
Absolutely.
It's now becoming pressing for me. So I was wondering.
Yes, before you jump on your other call, I would like you to share how people can connect with you. Just give a snippet of your new book as well, and then we will wrap it up.
Sam, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me and having a very open conversation, allowing for me to rant on some of my ramblings. So minterdial.com is my general website. I blog there regularly since 2006. I have my own podcast, which is called Minter Dialogue. And I try to have conversations with interesting people around the world in the space of branding and leadership. And then, I've got a few books, one of which is also turned into a documentary film. Great for people who are interested in history. It's a Second World War documentary called The Last Ring Home, personal story for this matter, that is about how my grandfather was a prisoner of war of the Japanese and going from a life of privilege to dying, weighing half his weight and being killed as a prisoner, and discovering what that life was like and thinking how lucky we are to be living in today's world. And I've written a book that also could please, based on the type of work that you're doing, Sam, which is called Artificial Empathy, which is about driving empathy into life, business, and eventually into AI. And my new book comes out in January 3, called You Lead, How Being Yourself Makes You a Better Leader. It's by Kogan Page. And I'm rather tentatively hopeful that it will have an impact on how leadership is happening in business and will be change for the good.
Absolutely, definitely. Thank you very much, Minter, for being my guest on my podcast, Chai with Sam Dosa. And I wish you all the best for your future endeavors. And we will again get in touch and have another great conversation. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Enjoy the chai.
Bye. You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.